Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery, code Wondery.
Life is full of personal wins, whether it's cleaning your house, getting that dream car, or checking off your to-do list. Winning at life is a great feeling. And with the State Farm Personal Price Plan, you can keep winning when you create an affordable price just for you by bundling home and auto. So give yourself a round of applause. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with the Personal Price Plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
Welcome to the Nerds Podcast number 377. Well, Course of the Force is fast approaching. It's July 9th through the 16th, leading up to San Diego Comic-Con. You can go to starwars.com/Course of the Force, and you can help us carry a lightsaber all the way down the California coast, starting from Skywalker Ranch and going down to San Diego to benefit the Make-A-Wish Foundation. And we're putting up a bunch of Course of the Force videos, so go to youtube.com/Nerdist and click subscribe, because there's a lot of other fun stuff there, too, and more to come. I would like to thank Hulu Plus for sponsoring this episode of the Nerds Podcast. Obviously, you know what Hulu is. People watch Hulu. Well, with Hulu Plus, you get total control to watch thousands of shows wherever you want, whenever you want, on any of your devices. It's game consoles, Blu-ray players, Roku, Apple TV, PCs, television sets. Just, I mean, it really, instead of, like, Hulu will just give you some of the latest episodes of things, but Hulu Plus will give you entire seasons. You'll get full everything. Shows like Downton Abbey, Revenge, Once Upon a Time, Grey's Anatomy. You want to go back and live Grey's Anatomy again, you can do that with Hulu Plus. Modern Family, The Office, Community, Parks and Rec, Jimmy Fallon, The Vampire Diaries. I'm not going to judge you. If you want to watch a vampire soap opera, that's fine. Hey, I watch True Blood, you know. I'm not going to crap on you for watching The Vampire Diaries. Maybe you like your vampires teens. Maybe you just like... Do you like teen vampires or adult vampires, Katie? And then it's also weird to say teen vampire, because does that mean that a vampire that is still a young vampire or a teenager who is a vampire? I don't know semantics. I don't know if Hulu Plus will solve that for you, but they'll do pretty much everything else you want if you want to watch great television that you don't have a chance to sit in front of your TV and watch when it comes on. So right now we have a very special offer for Nerdist listeners. Go to HuluPlus.com/Nerdist, all in lowercase, and you're going to get an extended free trial to enjoy Hulu Plus. Again, HuluPlus.com/Nerdist. This podcast is Josh Groban, who is freaking delightful. God damn it, he's delightful. I met him a while ago. He was friends with a bunch of comics and really funny and charming and just talented. God damn it. He's just one of those guys you just want to hang out with all the time. Everyone needs a Josh Groban, Katie. In our case, it's actually Josh Groban, but since he isn't able to go around the country and be with everyone, get a little Groban in your life. And, you know, when you look around the table, if you can't find the Groban, maybe you're the Groban. Put some Groban in you. That should be his next album. I don't think he's going to call it that, but that's what I'm forward. I'm putting that before him and the universe right now. Put some Groban in you. For the Nerdist Podcast, episode number 377, with Josh Groban.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Somewhere.
Really?
The whole podcast is falling apart.
Ah, shit. That was the screw that was holding the podcast together.
Hey, I'm Matt.
Josh, how are you?
Nice to meet you. Hi, I'm Jonah. Josh. Nice to meet you, Josh.
Yeah, you too.
Here
that's a
we
rad
go.
Shirt.
Oh, thank you.
I got to take a picture of that.
Here's
shirt.
Here's some
my
water for
my
you.
Wife. Oh, nice. It's, it's a great t-shirt and kind of sweatshirt store in Soho, in London.
Oh, we were just there.
Super superficial.
It's Nice. She's gonna. That's something she would actually probably draw.
You can get them off their website.
I don't see a spread eagle woman on that.
Hey, not all the time does she do that.
Welcome to the podcast, Josh Groban. It's a podcast with Josh Groban.
I have my male soprano voice.
Taking it down low.
I'm very glad to finally have you on. Josh, I don't know if people... Well, you know what? I do think now they do have a sense of that you are a funny guy because it was... I think it was maybe like 3 or 4 years ago I was doing a show at UCB and Sarah Silverman was like, oh, I'm texting Josh Groban. He's the fucking funniest guy in the world. We went bowling. We hung out. And then it was I think that was right around when you started doing stuff with Kimmel and, you know...
Yes. Sarah's a liar and a thief.
What is her problem?
Why did she have to say fuck in front of all those people?
What the? But I think it's always nice for people who think they know you in one context.
Well, I think too. I mean, part of it is just out of necessity. I think when you do something for a living that involves a lot of seriousness, you know, like I have always been super serious about music. When I'm doing my concerts, you know, I'm always getting letters from people saying like, oh, this song, you know, it made me cry and it got me through this very difficult time. If I don't level that out with craziness and humor, then I will implode. So
yeah.
So the comedy stuff was actually kind of more out of just self-defense in junior high school when I was just picked on relentlessly.
Hey, hooray!
Yay, hurrah!
Oh my God, what...
It was my shield.
You too.
Yeah.
I am protected behind the shield.
If I tell the joke first, you can't.
I will attack myself first, so you cannot attack me.
Yeah, exactly. Death by self-joke.
That's what it is.
Yeah. And so, you know, it kind of started with that. And I developed like a little improv troupe when I was in, you know, I was born and raised here in Los Angeles. I went to this school called Windward out in the valley. And I kind of started this improv group. And I just started playing kind of comedy games and just loved being around comedians. And then I realized I had a big-ass baritone voice. It's like, oh, okay, well, I like doing this too. And so it's nice that now at 32 I feel like I can finally find a way to balance both worlds a little bit.
The thing is, if you guys are playing improv games and then you have your voice when you start doing the musical ones, everyone's like, nah, I'm doing an improv, and you're like,
they're like, dude, you shouldn't be here.
Let's do another music game. No, Josh,
come on, dude. It's not fair.
No.
It's not fair.
Yeah.
Music was not your first thing. I mean, I know that you are. I assume you always could sing, but I think you wanted to be an actor.
Well, yeah, I mean, every kid can sing. Like, I was a little kid. You know, my mom would kind of tempt me with Cheerios. Cheerios were my crack when I was a kid. And she'd get a big box of
Cheerios. What kind?
They were just regular at this point. This was old school.
Some idiot kid?
Regular Cheerios.
I know. Crack was my crack.
Regular crack?
Yeah. But yeah, no, I my mom would make me sing like little kid songs and then let me put my grubby little hand in the Cheerio box and whatever I could pull out was my reward.
I really hope that after your concerts now, there's someone standing there with like a jar of Cheerios for you.
Yeah,
like,
that's what they
nice concert.
Yeah, that's my weird
like
writer.
Madison Square Garden.
Writer
request. Here you go.
Here's your Cheerios.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Okay, you could do one more encore. You don't get these Cheerios.
That
are they
actually,
the frosted ones? Yeah, they're the frosted ones.
Strangely, is really appealing to me and arousing. Strangely, I don't know why that just happened.
Nothing strange about arousal. Right?
Yeah. Listen,
let it go.
That's sexy-o.
Yeah. No, I sang as a kid. I didn't know that I would have a really big voice until I went through puberty and started going to concerts. And when I came back to my house, I would close the door to my room and I would just start singing the stuff that I heard. And I realized that I could sing. It was terrifying, though. I was totally shy about it. It wasn't until I had a voice teacher that said, you know, it was a voice teacher that was the father of a kid I went to school with who was like, oh, you know, hey, you want to take a few voice lessons? It wasn't creepy like that, but, you know.
Why are you in my room?
Why are these voice lessons at 1:30 in the morning?
So much better with your shirt off, trust me.
Why are your shorts so short?
Yeah. I mean, we're trying to help develop
your voice
as best as possible.
He's an amazing voice teacher. He's a guy named Seth Riggs, and he lived around the corner from my folks. I went to school with his son Matt. And he was like voice teacher to the stars. I'd go over for movie night and sleepovers and like birthday parties and stuff. And Michael Jackson and Stevie Wonder would be leaving the house. Like it was just insane. Like the people that would be walking
sleepovers
in and out. Yeah.
Stevie would never see you though.
Exactly right.
Come on.
You know.
Why would you?
Do it.
Your crack is crack.
I don't know. Crack is the crack.
So at some point, you know, he let, like, you know, all of Matt's friends take, like, a mini voice lesson with him as, like, a school kind of masterclass thing. And I wound up singing. He goes, oh, that's very good. Oh, that's very, very, very good. And he let me take voice lessons with him. And then David Foster, who discovered me and is a great producer, called him one day and said, who are you working with? I need someone young who can sing. And he sent my tape, and that's kind of how the singing started.
How old were you at this point?
I was 16.
So...
And I started singing seriously at 14. So...
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and it was very quick.
But the music, like, it's... Is when you were thinking about the kind of music that you wanted to do, did you ever think like, oh, I want to? Did you ever fuck with other genres of music, or did you
rock opera?
Did you ever just think, you know, I have this very specific kind of voice, and so that will probably dictate the kind of music that I'm going
to
do?
You know, it was just one of those serendipitous things that the stuff that I was listening to, because I was a big, like, theater nerd. Like, for me it was praying to the altar of Sondheim. Like, I was just absolutely obsessed with my parents. I attribute that to my parents taking me to tons of shows in Los Angeles. We go to the Dorothy Chandler, we go see stuff at the LA Opera and stuff like that. And I was a big fan of other genres, but when it came to, like, what I wanted to express and what I wanted to be the vessel for musically, it was that stuff. And so when I realized I had that voice, it was the greatest thing, because when it came to, like, rock music and stuff, I wanted to play drums. I didn't want to sing rock music. I wanted to sing like the theater gods that I'd grown up listening to. I wanted to sing like, you know, Brian Stokes Mitchell and George Hearn and all those guys. And so it just kind of fell into place.
How do you keep your voice from shredding? I guess it's just years of training. You know how to sing properly.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, we're all nuts. I mean, singers are crazy, because you can't just polish it and put it away and go burn the candle at both ends. It's a huge responsibility. And I just came off of a 26-date European tour. We just got off the road like 5 days ago, and I don't know what to do with my time these last 5 days. I mean, you get so used to a regimen of nothing else matters except those 2 hours every night. And all it takes is, after show 50 or 60, just going, oh, I can just, you know, I don't need a whole lot of sleep tonight. I got the show in my back pocket. You know, it's no big deal. You go out on stage and not be sure if you're going to sing the note. It's a terrifying experience. It is your worst nightmare.
Have you ever not hit it?
It's like those. Oh, I've had a couple of times where I've not hit it. I had one night where I had an allergic reaction to something that I ate, and I actually lost my voice after like song four, like just gone. I had sung 80 shows without a hitch, and all of a sudden after song four, and you just start croaking like that slow-mo chase in your dreams where you're just it was absolutely horrible. And so I basically, for the first time in my whole career, had to say to the audience, hey guys, I think I'm ill.
I didn't
feel this during soundcheck, but it seems to be that I literally have like the biggest frog in my throat. Give me 15 minutes.
Wow.
To 15,000 people. Give me 15 minutes. I'm going to go backstage and just figure out what this is, and just take five.
Wow.
How did they take that? I was awful. It was awful. I thought that they would just have all left. I was seriously expecting to walk out to half an arena.
But it's not like your audience is like Bad Religion audience.
No,
like, fuck you.
Well, that's the thing, is that that's why it's so terrifying. Is I literally
the reference is hilarious.
Do you want to know why I said Bad Religion?
Because they got mad at you when you came out to introduce them. That's why I think it's hilarious.
Oh.
You're the one that has that experience.
Because in my mind, the worst audience that you can go out, the most aggressive audience you can go out for is Bad Religion.
Ooh, there's much worse.
Well, I know. But I didn't experience it. Yeah. That my bad is Bad Religion.
My nightmare was Milwaukee. What city did that happen in?
Los Angeles.
Oh, that was LA.
Okay,
well, so LA is a tough crowd.
Yeah, Milwaukee's a nice town.
That's a nice town, you know?
Good theater town.
Go backstage, have a little beer, have a little cheese.
You're right on a river.
Get that throat back in shape, right on a go swim.
When your voice went out, you should have picked someone that was singing along in the end and go, I can't do it. You have to do it for me.
Can anyone play the drums?
Dream, it's happening. Yeah. So you go, but so
you, what's your name?
Little Billy. I'm Tiny Josh Groban.
Yeah. Not anymore. Now it's Little Billy.
Little Billy. So what, you go backstage and
I go backstage, I take a minute. I actually wound up taking like 25 minutes, and I just kind of needed to find a way not to freak out. I just decided not to freak out, and I went back out on stage and I said, okay, well, here's the deal. Because I've got nothing, I've got no back. I've got the most amazing band in the world. We travel with a group of great kind of orchestra members. But as far as if I can't sing, I'm fucked. I'm completely fucked. So I have no backup dancers. I can't dance for shit. And you know, there's no such thing as like, you know, there's no lip syncing in my world, no autotune in my world.
You don't want to add a little bit of a dance element, maybe,
you know, just like just some sort
like
of
like Ashley Simpson as that SNL.
Oh,
like,
yes,
when in doubt, just do the jig.
Just
the do-si-do. Yeah, just do the do-si-do. That handled, obviously, that worked really, really well. So,
yeah, but of course, she didn't have to complete another hour of show.
They tell you in musical theater college, when in doubt, just blind them with your jig. Yeah. You know, and all will be revealed. No, I went out on stage, and I think just kind of calming my brain and kind of telling them, look, we've got like three options here. One is we can cancel. Boo, boo. Okay, all right. Yeah. That was the Bad Religion response.
That was about, yeah.
And the other one is that I can lip sync. Oh, all right. Well, the third option is I can just do the best I can and we can get through. Yeah. Okay. So just kind of saying that, and sports psychology, I think, is the same way. I mean, you watch like I'm a big tennis fan. So you watch kind of the ebb and flow and the momentum that the different sides have of just getting their mojo back.
Yeah.
I needed to say that and I needed to see where the audience was. And I realized, okay, they're on my side. And I sang great the rest of the night. It was just one of those things.
So you probably – it was probably a little something and then anxiety
Little something and the anxiety turned it into a big something.
Yeah.
And then you had to kind of take away the anxiety again. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Sorry. Do you have the option to lip sync? Was that one of the options you really had?
No, that wasn't an actual option.
That was just a joke option.
I don't know what would have happened if they were all like, I could lip sync. Yay!
We got the live band.
I could stand here and play my song through my iPhone and then I could just
do
stand
a live
here
commentary.
And snap
do
my
a live commentary.
Do the jig around a cardboard cutout. Out of myself.
Yeah.
I saw George Carlin once live, and he like lost his place because of like a frog in his throat.
Yeah,
and then he stopped down. And he's like, "Oh, I'm sorry. I'm gonna like take a break. just give me a second. I just need to think." And then he starts drinking like from a glass that looked kind of like just a booze glass. And then someone's like, "Yeah." He's like, "No, fuck you. This is not booze. I don't fucking drink booze. This is flat room temperature Coca-Cola."
And then that's supposed to be good for your throat.
Yeah, he says like it's an opera singer like was like told him it a long time ago. He's like, yeah, if you need a quick soothe,
yeah,
it kind of just all the sugar or like, you know, syrup just kind of coats it and just it's kind of a quick fix.
Yeah, Elton John is all just Diet Coke. He's got cans of Diet Coke next to his piano wrapped in paper so nobody sees that he's like promoting Diet Coke. But it's soda.
Well,
like,
the cat's out of the bag now,
the bag
Josh.
Now.
But flat.
Pay the man, Diet Coke.
Take those labels off. Yeah. Open up those cans. Open up those cans.
The audience starts demanding. Get in mass.
Have you ever met Elton? You must have.
Have you ever sung
with Elton John?
Yeah, I've sung with him a couple times.
I met him once.
At a Bad Religion concert.
It was not at a Bad Religion concert.
Bring on the third, band, you cunt.
Third row center, Elton John.
I thought
this was going to be Good Religion.
That was a John Lennon impression.
Yeah. That's too bad for my taste.
Is there any other kind of religion, really?
I knew this religion would be bad, but this is horrible.
This puts the bad in bad religion.
No religion, too?
Wow, nice.
I guess I don't have to imagine how bad this is. I'm actually seeing it.
Robert Zemeckis, if you need someone to voice over John Lennon in another Forrest Gump, we're here.
Well played.
I don't think, you know, once you're letting Yoko sing on Double Fantasy, I don't think you're allowed to shit on any other band.
Oh my God. Did you see the Bill Burr on his podcast broke down the performance on I forget what show it was, but Chuck Berry and John Lennon singing on the show?
No.
And like just talking about Yoko just being back there. And someone took it and put it on YouTube. I saw it on Reddit the other day. And just like, because the Bill Burr podcast, he just talks to himself. So it's Bill, which is Bill's fucking phenomenal, and I could listen to Bill
talk all
day.
He's one of the best.
And so he's just breaking this performance down, and the person put it up on YouTube with the performance in the background. So like the moments you talk, like he's talking it syncs up.
Oh, like it's a commentary.
He's like, there's this moment where she's off in the fucking back over there with her goddamn drums just drumming away, and John Lennon's so fucking pussy whipped, he's singing his dream thing, and you can see the moment. You see the moment in Chuck Berry's face when she opens her fucking mouth and just screams. And they pause it, and Chuck Berry has the widest eyes.
The day the music died.
I can't believe what's happening.
Did you hear
phenomenal.
Yoko and Sonic Youth put out an album last year? Nothing but hooks. Nothing but hooks on that one.
Wow.
Should we all pass like the Yoko story?
Anyone else got a Yoko
stone? Anyway,
do you have a good Yoko stone?
No. No, I don't, unfortunately.
Remember when she cameoed on
She
Mad
follows
about
me on
you?
Twitter. That's about it.
You remember that?
She cameoed on Mad. She cameoed.
What?
She does. You know, she follow, I saw like Yoko Ono is following you on Twitter.
She also
like,
follows Popeye's Chicken.
Yeah, exactly right. She's
I'm
following like a million and a half people.
Nothing wrong with that.
No, there's nothing wrong with that. It's just like it's just an interesting collection of.
I wonder what got that chicken from Popeye's would sound like out of her mouth. That'd be amazing.
She don't see. You have to be very careful because if you sing that, Popeye's is going to be like yoink, and then you're going to be like Josh Groban for Popeye's Chicken.
Me and Elton, pay us.
Diet Coke.
The Popeye's, and Popeye's Diet Chicken. Coke
I actually have a love affair going on with California Pizza Kitchen on Twitter. I love it very much. I grew up with it.
You know,
I,
the IPK? Inventor of the barbecue chicken pizza.
I live tweet my barbecue chicken chop salad experiences for free.
It's a good salad.
It's a good salad.
It's a good salad.
So yeah. I did get to meet Elton John. I went to see him in Vegas at the Coliseum. At the Caesars. And we went backstage. And
was that the La Chapelle show? Was that the David Chappelle Design show?
Yeah,
that was
yeah.
with the inflatable lips and all the stuff.
Red
going.
Piano, yeah. And there's this really awesome. And it's funny that I just got back from Philadelphia, but when he sings Philadelphia Freedom, there's this fucking amazing collage, David La Chapelle video that's gorgeous. And so we met him backstage, and his hands are like fucking baseball mitts, and they're the strongest hands that you've. I mean, it's Elton John.
Yeah.
But his hands are like fucking robo hands.
Oh, my God.
Just from playing, you know.
Yeah.
Just from playing piano.
Absolutely.
But he was incredible.
Did anyone come out and crump during the show?
There was not any. There was a crump-free
no
show.
No David LaChapelle show.
But this
then.
Was in 2003 was, or 4.
That's
so
when
this,
the movie came out, I think. That's when Rise came out.
Really?
Yeah.
All right. Well, no. There was no.
Was there, Courtney Love there?
She was not there. Do you have a good Courtney Love story?
I think
just keep naming people.
One of the
speaking of Yoko's,
I have a funny picture of me and Courtney Love from the World Music Awards in like 2003, 2004, and Celine Dion was on the TV screen in the green room doing one of her songs, and Courtney Love for whatever reason just like pulls me down to the floor. We're not going to sit in a chair to watch this performance. Let's kneel on the floor to watch this performance. And Courtney Love pulls me down on the floor, and oh, I wish there was cameras near. This is the funniest, seriously the funniest picture. I'll show you this picture in a minute. But it's I just look so confused, and Courtney Love's got like a dangling cigarette out of her fingers, and I've got like an Irish vest and like and I've still like got a little bit of that kind of image, but back in 2003 I was like all about that and all about the Irish vest.
I couldn't be
seen on stage without an Irish vest.
You know what? No one else is doing it.
No one else is doing this thing.
I'm gonna be the one to bring this to the stage.
So unpunk, it's punk.
Yeah. What kind of vest is that? Looks vaguely Irish.
Yeah. Anybody ready for some good religion? All right.
Give us that good time.
Raise me up, folks. All righty.
Josh Groban picking up where Riverdance left off.
Yeah, jig. You can't jig without a vest.
No.
And it's so that's my only thing. It's just an odd watching of Celine Dion with Courtney Love on the floor.
Was she enjoying it?
Oh, she was. The picture of us is just like, oh my God! It was just we were both in awe of the Celine.
Yeah, she. I had two experiences with her. One at the Video Music Awards one year in like '95. I told you the story where she's just basically yelled at, like they were sound checking and she was yelling at her band. And they were like, why don't you guys fucking play? And they were trying to explain to her that...
Was this Hole?
Yes, this was Hole. And she was yelling at Eric Erlandson. And they were trying to explain to her that the sound, the audio hadn't connected the instruments yet. But it didn't... Like, that type of logic was not...
Right.
Did not stand.
Oh, that technical issue.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So she was still yelling.
Not
like,
plugged in.
Shut up. You don't even know how to play guitar, Eric. Like, she was yelling and like, stuff like that.
He's like, Courtney, no, I do insist. I know how to play. Yeah. There's no amplification.
Yeah, there's no amplification. Yeah. I technically know
I have
play.
Taken lessons. There's a reason you hired me for this band.
And then she was receiving an award for something. I can't imagine what. But then she... It was for MTV, and then she was... talking about how this show that I used to host, Singled Out, was was the worst show, and it like she didn't like the way that it categorized people. It was just basically like of all the people that could come out with the humanitarian argument against Singled Out, it was Courtney Love. And then I ran into her at the K-Rock Acoustic Christmas that year, and I was like, hey, how come you hated my show? She was like, I don't know. Whatever. Like, she just sort of shrugged it off. And I wanted to be like, no. You don't get to do that. Anyone else could do that, but not you.
Not you. She's like, Chris, sit on the floor with me. Let's watch this. Kneel with me, brother.
Yeah. You know, an assistant rolls up a screen with Celine Dion on it. I come here to think sometimes.
That's, in the words of Celine.
That's her crack.
Yeah.
You know, you've sung with Celine.
Yes. Before. Yeah. I got kind of one of my first big breaks with Celine. It was at the Grammys in 1999, and I was, you know, this was right after David had found me through this voice teacher, David Foster. So he calls me up 3 weeks after he first discovered me and said, you know, hey, you were really great at this event. I sung at this thing for the governor. And I'm at the Grammys. Celine is here. Andrea Bocelli is here. They're supposed to sing a duet. Andrea Bocelli is sick. Whoa. Can't show up to the rehearsal. I was in math class, basically. I was 17 still. I was going to LA County High School for the Arts. And
so sort of math class.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Mathemagic.
Here are two apples.
Exactly. If two doves appear from my sleeves.
How many do your agent get?
Yeah, and Jenna,
did I get it right? No, you didn't, but you tried your best.
Now let's all have barbecue chicken pizzas.
Yay! If Jennifer does 5 high kicks down the hallway.
You can do anything.
Yeah, then you can do anything. Yeah. Class over.
Then she'll get cast in the reboot of Fame. That is a correct answer. Lunchtime. Everyone get your avocados.
That's pretty...
We're going to take down Crossroads at the Belief Fest.
Yeah, at the Chopping Festival. Yeah. Oh, God. Our lacrosse team sucked so bad. Okay.
Just try to be aggressive. Act like you're being aggressive.
Yeah.
Give me that ball. Yeah.
It's a stick, not a baton.
No. No. You have to get it in the net. Stop coordinating your dance moves.
But then that's the movie. The coach that's able to take those talents and turn it into a good lacrosse team.
That's right.
So they spin the baton and it gets into the goal.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, there it is.
That's the happy ending.
That's the happy
ending. That's not real life. That's not what actually happened.
What do you know about real life, L.A. County School for the Arts?
Touche. Yeah, that really was the class where my history teacher was like, well, where is your essay that you were supposed to do? And I said, rehearsal ran really late. And she goes, oh, I'm sure you tried your best. Bring it in a few days.
Jesus Christ.
Rehearsal. Well, she was right.
Rehearsal always ran late. Yeah.
So you got pulled out of...
Anyway.
You got pulled out of
I digress.
Class.
Yeah, and went to this is when the Grammys were at the Shrine Auditorium, and went to the Shrine, and David Foster hadn't thought this through. I mean, I just left class, and because they totally let you do that, by the way. Can I leave class? No, but I have to sing. Go on.
At the Grammys.
Yeah. Oh.
What are you still doing here?
We'll need a full report when you get back.
That's right. Right.
Take the school helicopter. Yeah.
And then a ladder just drops down from outside of the window. You just
and it's Julie Andrews.
Quick, come up. Get up here. Yeah.
Harrison Ford is the pilot.
Yeah. A rhinestone helicopter. How about that?
Yeah, and Harrison Ford is just pissed as always. Yeah.
Hang on, kid.
Hang on, kid. Oh, Lordy. I don't even know.
Don't touch my weed. Hang on.
Your fake story is so much better than my real story.
I like Julie Andrews as Chewbacca.
I think she's got it. by Jove.
So you get to the Grammys. You're supposed
to
sing.
No pass. I'm standing outside the shrine. This giant bodyguard. I'm saying basically I've got to get in there and sing with Celine. They're like, yeah, right. I'm with my dad. And I wind up going in. And it was an amazing experience. Celine was really, really cool. My hand was shaking. She took my hand and was like, okay, our new choreography is I'm going to hold your hand through this. Because I was terrified. But it went really well. And that was at a time when now at the Grammys – everybody's siloed. Everybody's in their own dressing rooms. You know, Lil Wayne will be in his place and Ozzy will be in his place. Nobody sees anybody ever. At the Shrine, everybody's sitting out in the audience and watching everybody else's rehearsal. So while we're doing this rehearsal, Madonna's sitting out there. Aerosmith is sitting out there. They're just waiting for their rehearsal out there because there's no space for dressing rooms backstage. So it was a big moment. Andrea Bocelli maybe was not going to possibly show up. So they're telling me go buy a suit.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, no, it was a star.
That really is a moment of you get up here.
Yeah, exactly right. And I'm even standing on stage and they're going, where's this Groban kid? Grobang? Brolin? Where's
Josh Brolin?
Bring us Josh Brolin. Yeah.
And was there also a possibility of Bocelli showing back up?
I was hoping that he would, because as much as I was thrilled to kind of do a nervous rehearsal, I was not ready to do this with her on camera to millions of people. So he does show up, and so I was off the hook, but in the audience at that rehearsal, there were so many people that it wound up being a really big break for me. They had seen me at that rehearsal, and it kind of wound up being a thing. 10 years later, I actually got to sing that song with Bocelli at the Grammys on the telecast. So it was like a full circle moment. But yeah, no, I when I look back at how the stars aligned, it was really like
That's
old. It was like the last fleeting moments of old school Hollywood.
You're like, the least pretentious person I've ever met, by the way, because you say that and it just sounds like, oh, okay. Like it just sounds very sweet and not, it doesn't sound like, oh, Bocelli. It's like, oh, 10 years later, I got to sing with Bocelli. It's just like so
or
nice.
Or most pretentious person ever because no big deal.
Yeah.
NBD, bro.
Yeah.
NBD.
Because no big deal. That's the name of your book at the end of your list.
No big deal.
Because no big deal.
You've sung with Elton, right? Yeah, no big deal.
I mean, I just thought everyone had.
Yeah, right. Yeah, sure.
You guys didn't get plucked out of your
head? You should. Oh, you should sing with Elton. It's a lot of fun. You should try it.
It's so fun.
You can't. That's fucking awesome,
He's a very generous duetter.
You know, he gives you the strong harmony. Mm-hmm. Like, he's there for support.
Yeah,
he's there to support.
You'll see.
You'll see. Yeah.
I saw him and Billy Joel on their face-to-face tour, and it was the best thing in the
world. Oh,
God,
shit.
That sounds awesome.
I just amazing. Adore them together.
They would just put their pianos together.
Did they go their songs back and forth?
Yeah.
Or,
yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, it was great.
And
was
did they
like,
sing?
Like Daffy and Donald and Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
they would sing each other's songs. They would like pick up verses of each
what
other's
What was the
songs.
Best?
Oh, that
they
sounds like so much fun.
What was the best song? What was the best mashup?
Well,
Chopsticks,
Crocodile Rock.
They did Crocodile Rock.
Yeah, of course they did.
God damn it!
Why wouldn't they do Crocodile Rock?
Did they do Allentown? And did Elton go? Ah!
No, they didn't do Allentown. Piano Man was great. I mean,
they played Piano Man.
Of course they did.
They played Candle in the Wind too.
Yes.
What?
Are we just gonna go to the whole playlist?
Did they play?
Josh, hang on a second. Did they play?
Did they play each other's songs? Did Billy Joel like just go into Circle of Life?
Yes. Yes. Not Circle of Life.
Deep cut, Groban.
They actually both just covered Phil Collins from the Tarzan soundtrack.
Nice.
There's a really awesome. I found this when I was in England, and I guess it's a couple years old. Maybe a couple years old. But there's a there's an Australian like mixed duo called, I think it's called Panau, and they did
Poen?
No, they did it. They took a bunch of deep cut Elton John songs and fucking remixed them like techno disco style
with Linkin Park.
Fucking, they did not do that. They did not do that, and it's fucking awesome.
Wow.
And I want to find it. But did you ever tour with him, or was it just like, oh, we did one performance at the Grammys?
With Elton or Andrea Bocelli?
No, with Elton.
With Elton, it was a charity event. It was a couple of charity events. We were both on the bill, and we just decided to kind of join forces.
Holy shit. Here we go.
Oh, yeah, you showed me this one.
Oh.
Yeah, this is great.
Oh, Daft Punk.
Yes, check it out. This is just, I was not aware of the song. Here we go.
2, 3, 4.
Yeah. I used to know this old scarecrow.
Fucking
my joy and sorrow.
Do you know this song?
Yeah, I mean, this is...
I thought I knew a lot of Elton John songs, but I was not...
I think this is off of Honky Tonk Man. I think this is like early, early.
Yeah, his voice is still pretty...
It's pretty young.
Yeah. That's a straight Elton voice.
Man, that's like... This is smooth.
Isn't it?
Yeah, I could get massaged to that.
They would need a happy
and
ending.
And will.
Yeah, there's a whole album of that. They like they just took a whole bunch of his songs.
That's pretty awesome.
Who have you, other people that you've wanted to sing with, or have you pretty much like, is your bucket list full of check marks?
My bucket list is pretty much just always just Bjork.
Wow. Have you ever?
No. I had a chance to meet her at the Hollywood Bowl once, and I just decided not to because there's some people that are just like, you just don't want to.
Don't ruin it.
Don't ruin it.
She's been doing a bunch of like weird off shows, like Family Tree shows.
Yeah, well, I saw her at the Science Center in the Bronx in New York.
You two should collaborate. I'm serious.
I don't know.
She could take your voice and do like really insane
Crazy
Bjorky
things. Yes,
it.
Get Matmos and get all those guys.
Cover a Bjork song. Cover Hyper Ballad.
There you go.
And then she'll come.
They should have did that with the Brodsky Quartet, though.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Did you ever hear the Brodsky Quartet cover of Hyper Ballad?
No.
It's fucking awesome.
I'm going to turn her Hyper Ballad into really level-headed, mellow ballad.
Level-headed.
Yeah. It's like I stay away from the edge of the cliff to be safe.
I'm going to give her Ballad Ritalin, and it's going to calm way down.
I don't throw things off that aren't mine.
This is the Brodsky Quartet.
They're the I love them so much.
You've never heard this?
No.
This is a great album.
I could just listen to this song and repeat. Yeah.
Jonah's mouthing the words.
I love this song so much.
I feel like string players get really excited when they get to pluck.
Oh, so you think they do the little pizzicato stuff?
Do you mind if we do some pits on this? Do you mind? Go for it, bro.
I'll just throw it in there.
Just throwing some pits.
Yeah.
Sort of like Andrew Bird a lot of plucking.
Is she singing live with them in this, or is this a remix?
I feel like they just took her vocals.
Gotcha.
And
yeah. Yeah, this sounds like the original vocal.
And they just layered. Stop acting out the words, Jonah. Here, I just want you to hear the chorus part because it's really fucking rad.
It's just so good.
Yeah. Here's a debate I've always had about the song. It's a sad song, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've gone in multiple arguments with people. I've worked at record stores before, so it comes up a lot.
Okay.
And, people go, it's like, no, it's a happy song. She's talking about how much she's in love with this guy and all the... And, I was like, no, she's talking about the things she has... She has to contemplate suicide to feel better about being with
this guy. I wonder
what
my body would sound like smashing against those rocks.
Yeah.
I'm going to put that in the depressed
box. But what they're hearing is, going back... to be with the guy and being happier, so
it's basically a song about sweeping things under the rug.
Yes, exactly.
I read a review. That's how you stay happy.
Her body against the rocks. She's just looking for a killer bass drum sound. She's just looking for that next.
She just needs percussion.
She's looking for that next level shit.
See, because I read a review of one of the first shows that she did when she was doing that residency here, and they said her voice was. Mind-blowing.
It's incredible. Right. She's got one of the best animalistic live primal vocals.
I'm a big
Sugar
Cubes fan.
Oh yeah, me
Sugar
too.
Cubes are great.
Incredible.
All those videos too.
Sweet and Low.
There's I have an old CD of hers where she went by her full name, which I can't pronounce.
Bjork Goodman's daughter.
Oh my God, that's right.
Goodman's daughter.
She's John Goodman's daughter.
Glinglow was that.
Two fucking word plays in a row, man. Come on. Sweet and Low and John Goodman's daughter. Fuck you.
I'm sorry.
I love you.
I'm not sorry.
Did you ever hear Glinglow?
Yeah, Glinglow.
Yeah,
Glinglow.
That was between Sugar Cubes and her going solo, right? As far as I remember.
Yeah, that was basically the Glinglow is that sort of it's like an Icelandic loungy.
Yeah, we all have that frame of reference. Icelandic lounges.
Well, music, as far as I can remember, music wasn't really allowed in Iceland for a very long time.
I had no idea.
And so, it's all their music is very. That's why everything's real esoteric and coming from a different place. Than
since
else.
We're just playing a lot of songs,
since we're
I lump all of us in. This is Glinglow.
Yeah.
All that early stuff of hers was very jazzy. It was jazz quartet stuff.
Tip your waitress. Which means something different in Icelandic.
Try the veal.
Try the veal.
And
it's like a Dave Ramsey Lewis.
And all the original Sugar Cubes music videos were done by Michel Gondry.
Oh shit!
Yeah,
right.
Hello, Josh. This is Bjork. I would like you to come sing a song with me.
You know
about the Rainbow Factory, but it's actually a night. It's a night rainbow. It's a night rainbow.
Night Rainbow is my favorite Dio song.
Night Rainbow. I think it should happen. I'm Bjork, who I'm sure listens to the podcast, has be like,
but I thought I was the only one who wanted to record with Josh Groban. I did not realize.
Anyway, back to Bjork. Anyway. I think that...
yes. Anyway, we've gotten off topic here.
Josh,
so Bjork.
I want to sing a song about fig spread.
Do you want to hear my impression of the human embodiment of a party bummer?
Sure.
Hey, you guys just want to hang out and watch Dancer in the Dark?
Yeah, sure. Come on.
Yeah, yeah.
You guys want to hear my impression of a pompous illiterate?
Sure.
I said I can't read.
Hey, that's the
thing. Thank you.
Yes. Thank you. Yes.
Cool.
Did you go see any of the Bjork shows or no?
Did I sing it any?
No, did you see any of it? Have you seen
it? Yeah, I saw her at the Hollywood Bowl with fireworks like 5 years ago. It was mind-blowing. It was incredible. And then I just saw her at the Science Place in the Bronx. It was just like 100 people, and she turned a Tesla coil into a synthesizer.
I think that's so amazing that you still have one. Like, with everything that you've done at 17,
yeah.
You're singing in front of all these all these people at the Grammys just at a moment's notice. But Bjork is the one person you're like, I don't think I could say hi to her.
No, it's so true, because I don't get... And I've been very, 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 very fortunate to have been able to sing with some of my absolute heroes, but she's just kind of up there.
Do you have a certain thing, an expectation, or some type of personal algorithm? Like when you go do a crazy show, like with Elton John, do you go, I want it to go this way, or do you pretty much is like you just sort of showing up and getting the experience? Do you just appreciate the process of it?
You kind of have to. I find that if you try to build it up too much in your head, you do worse. Performance-wise, I just think that, like, for me, if I just try and think to myself, okay, this is way bigger than any one kind of fantasy or dream that you have about this situation, try and just not fuck up, then you can look back at it and say, oh, I did really well. I can always put that feather in my cap of like, okay, I did the job, we did the thing, it was great. But yeah, you have those moments where you try to just not do anything or sing anything or think anything so you can just remember what's going on stage. Aretha Franklin was an example of that.
Oh, shit.
I got to sing with Aretha, and that was an amazing experience because this was for Nelson Mandela's 90th birthday concert. And
4 years ago.
That's very true.
You're welcome.
At Radio City Music Hall. And so we rehearsed in her dressing room, and basically the rehearsal with Aretha is moot because what happens is when she puts the mic to her mouth, you shut the hell up. And when she decides she's going to take the mic down and look up to the heavens, that's when you can fill in the gaps. And it was an amazing thing because it was basically like, okay, well, let's just figure out what the duet's going to be in real time. Yeah. Oh,
what was the song?
It was we did You Raise Me Up. Yeah, shit. She did that with me.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
And do you feel like well, is your mentality like, I just need to not fuck it up, or do you sort of like, oh, I'm gonna bring some shit to this song? Like, do you sort of feel like, not in an aggressively competitive way, but you're like, oh, I'm gonna try to match that?
Well, there's definitely a feeling of you just want to, you don't want to overstep any boundaries, and you don't want to certainly. I mean, when you have two voices like hers and mine, that are so different. You don't want to try and infiltrate her world, and you don't want to try and, like, certainly you don't want to, you know, she's the master. And in a situation like that, you basically have to look at it as this is going to be a master class and just try and keep up. But it's an amazing honor, and you kind of have to psych yourself out to say, okay, well, I'm, you know, this is Aretha Franklin right here, and just try to do the best you can. And no, you don't want to try and overstep because you're not going to be able to.
Do you, now that people have sort of uncovered, like, oh, Josh is funny and, you know, he likes to fuck around, are you sort of sorry in a way that people are like, hey, it'd be really funny if you sang this ridiculous song with your really nice voice? Like, are you tired of getting those requests?
No, I mean, I think it's actually really fun and funny because I always used music in comedy when I was younger too. So I think it's amazing that it's taken me this long to kind of start doing that a little bit. But certainly when you do stuff like I did this thing with Kanye, the Kanye tweets for Jimmy Kimmel, I sang some of Kanye's tweets and that was really fun. And I did a thing on the Tim and Eric Awesome Show where I sang
Casey's
songs. But I did those because I was sincerely a fan of those shows, and I really wanted to kind of blend those both worlds. If it's funny and if it's intelligent, I've got no problem doing it. It's just sometimes a copy of a copy of a copy of a joke can just get really watered down.
Yeah. What is your daily... I'm curious, because... what is that? Do you hear like a... there was a static-y thing.
Is that much... Is that AC?
All right. Well, just...
You okay, Chris? Your nose is bleeding.
You're right.
What year is it?
Are those blood stains around your nipples? What's
no,
going on?
Oh, my God. I have nipples? I have six nipples.
We all do.
It would be amazing if we all just got Ebola right now.
Just right now.
Anyway, Bjork.
It's just like... that's punked in like 25 years when they can't surprise anyone anymore. Like, hey man, we gave Ebola to everyone in the room.
We're all dying of Ebola, and Ashton Kutcher runs out and like, punked.
Oh, I don't feel good. And then he drops dead. Yeah. Are you? What is your daily? Do you have to do a daily vocal routine?
If I'm on the road, it's a real crazy regimen. You know, it's a lot of sitting around and eating things from the minibar, followed by you're basically waiting. Like your whole life revolves around getting rest for the show. So I try to do a lot of warming up every day. I try not to overdo it. You don't want to leave it in the dressing room. You know, I think that sometimes singers can kind of over rehearse and over warm up because they're so afraid that it's just not going to be there out there, that they sing it so much backstage that once they get out there, they're actually kind of tired. So I try to warm up a little bit, but generally I think as long as you have a set list that warms you up, right? Because I got to do like 23 songs in a night with no intermission. So,
Jesus Christ!
So it's a lot of singing. It's like 2 hours of straight singing.
How long does it take you to come down after a set?
I'm a night owl after a show. Yeah. I mean, it's just
do you think, like you're just jazzed?
You're just
like,
kind of yeah.
Got it. Let's go.
Absolutely. I mean, you're bored as hell before the show. You're just kind of playing iPhone games and just trying to not nap basically, and then you go out there and you're just kicked into this overdrive of adrenaline, and so then you stay up, you know, you stay up. But that's honestly why, you know, so many artists, especially in the 70s and 80s, just kind of became addicts, is because they were trying to match the high of being on stage. They were bored. Alice Cooper used to talk about the reason he became an alcoholic was just because he couldn't leave the hotel. You know, he was just sitting around for 22 hours a day, you know, and then he was on stage and he felt the high of his life, and then the rest of it he just needed to drink, you know.
Yeah.
Or I think maybe with drugs, with certain types of drugs, it's keeping the high up, but I think also
it's bringing you down.
With alcohol, and that's just with depressant stuff, it's like I have to calm down, you know.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
They just, because they're still like. Ugh.
Yeah, I was very lucky early on in life that I realized that, like, video games did that for me. And
what are you playing right now?
Last of Us.
Yes, my girlfriend's been playing that, and I've been watching her.
Yeah, it's
and
pretty
it's
good.
That's real sad.
It's kind of just like playing it.
It is. It is. But BioShock, I fucking love.
You should watch the screen too.
I've been playing fucking Animal Crossing for the past couple of days. Like,
you got the DS. And
I did. She was like, "You have to play Animal Crossing." I'm like, "I don't want to play Animal Crossing." And so I finally got a DS just basically to make her leave me alone about it.
Yeah.
And I fucking can't put it down.
Oh, man.
I cannot put it. So, like, talk about like a come down. It's basically like a digital Zen garden,
right?
That you just can't,
absolutely
you can't stop.
Once I get rid of all my coins from Scramble, and I don't want to pay for any more coins. That's the worst. You're not gonna pay for more coins.
Nope.
So once I finish all my Scramble games, I'm out of coins. To keep my high going after a great concert, the crowd's going nuts, I play Guitar Hero on the back of my tour bus. Just to keep the crowd roaring. Yeah. And also, like, I can't play guitar for
you
shit.
You suck.
I can't play guitar for the life of me, but I'm, like, masterful at Guitar Hero.
You're walking off the stage now for the real show.
Yeah, now for
click,
the
click, 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 click,
click, click. Has anyone built a guitar that basically operates like the Guitar Hero guitar so that it actually produces?
Really?
I used to have a toy guitar called One Man Jam. That was exactly like that. It was. I got it in like 98.
This sad little chubby Hawaiian boy.
It was really
one man band, you guys.
I think it was Kawasaki made it.
Kawasaki. You get it at like Radio Shack.
Was it green?
Yes, it was.
Yeah, I had that.
Yeah, and it's you know, it has like all these like beats and stuff, and then like voice, you know, one man jam. And then you could turn up the speed and slow it down so you could like mix it up.
That's
like,
the only way to say the words "one man jam." By the way,
one man jam,
one man jam,
just my one man jam.
Is that the one man jam? I don't hear you. I'm sorry.
I wish they would make Guitar Hero. I think that would be a really cool idea.
Oh, that would be fantastic.
Yeah, but they made a controller for a game that was every fret, every string had a button.
Ooh. Yeah.
And then they realized, let's just make Rocksmith where you can just plug in a guitar.
Like an actual guitar and play.
Well, there was that great South Park episode about like, well, kids, why don't you just learn to play the real guitar?
Check this out, kids.
Yeah, check this out.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I hated about like a Rock Band where, you know, because I grew up playing drums and then to just like, I was like, oh, I'll fucking kill it at Rock. And then it's not the same.
No, not at all.
It's not the same. And you're just like, and then like everyone's like, I thought you said you played drums. I'm like, I'm really good at real things.
I play real drums.
I can't play Guitar Hero guitar.
On stage with a band, there's not fucking stars flying at me in 3D that I have to hit.
Well, just
you're
tits. Just
you're
tits
doing it wrong
because I'm so good.
Well, John Mayer was sitting behind me on the plane to Philadelphia a couple days ago, And I texted you, Matt, and you were like, get him on the podcast. I'm like, I'm not going to turn around and start bugging John
find
Mayer.
Out what happened to him?
What happened? What do you mean?
Close your mouth every once in a while, John. Just keep playing.
Oh, is that?
That's all I'd like.
Yeah. I don't know.
He's such a good guitar player. Like, he's a phenomenal guitar player. And then every so often I'll read something that he said, and I'm like,
I think that's a hard teach you thing. To read.
That's a hard thing to do when, like, you like a musician or something like that, and then they say something horrible.
That's
like
why I didn't want to meet Bjork.
Yeah.
Because I saw a video of her punching someone outside of an airport. It's
yeah.
Like,
oh, yeah.
You know, she got on a long flight, and they were trying
to... You know how many fucking views that would have? Bjork punches Josh Groban. Yeah.
She had just had a long concert.
Seriously.
Yeah.
That's... You need to make this happen. You said it's YouTube gold.
I'd give anything for that black eye.
Yeah, well, I think in John Mayer's case, I think he... A lot of times when he says something awful, he's going to be like, oh, this is going to be funny and edgy. And it just always comes off like, oh, no.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, no.
What's that crooner guy that parties a lot?
Oh, you're talking about
Andrew W.K. Yeah.
You're talking about
crooner.
What a great,
party
wonderful baritone.
Party till I puke.
You're talking about Buble. Michael Buble.
Yes, yes.
Yes, yes. That's like, I like that seeing that guy in interviews just because he always has that puffy, I've just been drinking nonstop. kind of face. I fucking love it.
Harks back to the olden times where you can do kind of like variety roasts and just be just functioning everything.
And it's totally supported. Everyone's
absolutely.
Keep drinking! Yeah.
Well, those songs were great because part of the interpretation of those songs were just so relaxed and just, you know, kind of party-centric. You know?
Can someone... maintain a career or with that lifestyle, or sooner or later they have to be like, well, I think it's either going to be this or the music, because your voice, as you start to get older, your voice isn't gonna...
Yeah, it's changes. It my personal opinion is that it will absolutely catch up with you. It may catch up with some people later than other people. I mean, you look at people like Ozzy Osbourne, for instance. He's got a great documentary going right now called God Bless Ozzy Osbourne. It's amazing, and he's totally sober now, and he's completely coherent, and he's singing great, and the Sabbath stuff he's just done with Rick Rubin is amazing.
That album is surprisingly great.
It's great. Yeah. And so you think to yourself, okay, well, you know, yeah, if you keep doing it, you know, it will catch up with you, because, you know, your voice is your instrument, and you can't just polish it and put it away and you know, all that.
And the thing that turned out, too, about, like, how, like, you know, everyone thought of Ozzy Osbourne during the Osbourne show is because his meds were all off, and that's why he was, like, babbling all the time.
He was a mess.
He was a mess in that show.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. No, it's true. Yeah.
Well, in the early days of the podcast, I did a thing where I went to his house and shot a video, and they let me take the audio and make it a podcast. And he was fucking phenomenal, by the way. I didn't know what he was going to do. And then as we were packing up and getting ready to leave, I heard him upstairs doing vocal warm-ups, and it was just really weird to hear Ozzy Osbourne's voice going,
That's true. All the rock guys that I know have some of the most strict vocal regimens before they go on stage. And by the way, like they all know that they can't perform at that rock level without being clean. I mean,
that's what happened to James Hetfield from Metallica.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You know, now they've all got meditation gurus backstage. They're all doing, you know, video conference vocal warm-ups with their voice teachers before every concert.
Because you take it for granted, because when you're in your 20s, you could drink fire
absolutely.
And shove rocks into your mouth.
Exactly right, yeah.
And then you just, like, fire a gun into your larynx.
What's this drink called? Fire rock?
Fire
bullet,
rock.
I'll take
yeah,
it.
Yeah, fire rock.
Throat
bullet.
Gunshot.
Yeah, schnapps.
Just schnapps.
Just schnapps.
Just Jaeger.
Peppermint schnapps.
Yeah, and then as you started to get older, then they're like, oh, yeah, it really is like a muscle. It's a muscle.
Yeah.
You can't just.
Totally. Well, because like I said, there's no worse feeling than being in front of 10,000 screaming people and just not being able to bring it. And I think that, you know, a lot of these guys that were partying really, really hard back when they could are kind of trying to make up for lost time. So as hard as they were partying is as hard as they are now taking B12 shots now. Like they are going super, super vegan, juicer, yoga.
The first major one that I think we saw after the post-70s rock boom, I think, was Aerosmith. Actually, it might have been Elton.
Yeah.
We're getting sober?
Yeah, we're just getting sober. Like, it's what I always loved. I know it's, well, maybe it was one of his biggest hits, but the song "I'm Still Standing" is a fucking great song because
it's
just
great.
Basically him describing "Oh, I almost died, but I'm still here." And it was sort of like his.
Well,
his
technically,
sort of
he's
comeback.
Still sitting.
He was still sitting, but spiritually standing.
Yes.
I'm still sitting. It's just that it just kind of has.
What's scary about that though is like they know the people who are partying and, you know, doing drugs and drinking, like the musicians. They know that a lot of post-sober albums are not very good. And that's kind of got to be a pretty scary thing.
But post-sober live concerts, I always find are always better.
Metallica, like the time I saw Metallica when I was a kid, the first concert I ever went to, and then the time I saw them last year at Outside Lands, was a the show I saw at Outside Lands was the fucking best show I've ever seen in my life. And I remember it was way better than when they were just fucking kind of going through it.
Yeah, because they can't sustain. It's a marathon when you're on tour. You're getting yourself ready for a complete marathon, and if you're fucked up, you just can't.
How long before they bring in a second drummer like Kiss?
Oh, is that what Kiss did?
Okay, that's what Kiss did. They had
Do they have to add an animal? Like, oh, it's a space chipmunk.
Yes. Oh, it's the gopher.
Yes. We already got Cat. We already got the Joker. We already got the gargoyle.
Yeah. It's the drumming dingo.
Sorry, guys. I'm Australian.
Yeah. I've got a toy baby dangling from my neck.
Got to represent my homeland.
Right.
Does your stuff get a lot of radio play, or does it just
every so often? Every so often, we'll find something that really gets the right kind of play on the right kind of station. But generally, I feel I feel like I got into the music business right as the old school business was still kind of permeating, and the way the fans behaved towards music was just kind of that way. Now, I mean, I feel very lucky that I can release an album, and I know my fans want to listen to it from beginning to end. It's not about what the single is, and so I think that sometimes when you're chasing what that next hit's going to be, it can be it can be hit and miss.
Is it challenging as someone who is clearly a very nice guy that because so much because I imagine so many of your fans have very emotional stories that they want to tell, and it's just finding that time I'm trying to focus, but you still want to be nice, but you still want to.
No, I enjoy it. I mean, I truly, I feel like I've been very lucky that I've been able to have, a good amount of success, but I also really can fly under the radar. Like, I don't feel bothered by any of it. Like, I don't feel like I can't. I like being anonymous. I like sitting in the park with my dog for a couple hours and just people watching. And the fact that I don't have people taking my picture and following me around is heaven to me, because I would lose my mind. So when people do come up to me and
you just look like a dumb nerd. That's why.
I know, right?
Until you call.
God.
Until guys, can I borrow glasses, Claude?
Until you call your dog from across the park, Sparky. And then it was like, oh shit. Yeah.
Where did this camera come from? Josh Groban.
Damn this power.
Like Josh Groban's hit Sparky.
That's right. Yes, because the paparazzi is only interested in great voices.
Do you have a song that everyone thinks is about one thing but is secretly about something completely different?
You Raise Me Up is not about Viagra.
Okay. All right. Good. That's finally this is the last word.
Yes.
All of his songs are about blow, actually.
Everything else. Everything else is
the movie. They're all about the movie Blow.
Yeah. Here's a funny thing. Yeah. It's about the movie Blow. Yeah. Love Johnny Depp.
Yeah. Yeah. And your song Paul Rubens is cool, not as Pee-wee is also a really great.
Did you know who that was?
Parenthetical, not as Pee-wee.
That's right. My next one's about Fred Willard. It's incredible.
Fernwood, your Fernwood song.
Who's coming to my show at the Bowl next week?
Oh, he's
so excited.
We had him on the podcast last week.
I love him to no end.
He's great.
He's really great.
He's such a nice guy and just ridiculously funny. And
are you more friends with comedy people? Yeah, I think you are friends with a lot of or music people.
The music, I don't know. I find that, I don't know, maybe you disagree, but I find the comedy world to be very kind of inclusive, and people are very nice to each other. And I find the music world sometimes to be very, everybody's got their own entourages and camps and teams, and it's a little bit more competitive, but I don't know.
That's because you're in the music industry.
Maybe because I'm a musician. Yeah, if you're in comedy, people are pretty catty. I don't know. Yeah, maybe so. But
And also, you actually have a real talent. And I honestly, I can't say, I would imagine that I wonder if a lot of pop stars now are a little insecure. Like, I remember hearing of these stories about guys in the hair metal days, guys like Sebastian Bach or Vince Neil, guys were really insecure because they didn't.
Sebastian Bach can sing.
Maybe it was Vince. Maybe it was Vince Neil was actually very insecure about his voice. And so I wonder if there are pop stars, especially now with with technology and stuff, where they're sort of like, oh shit, that guy actually.
So being awful and arrogant is just insecurity.
That is an insecurity.
Wow.
Well, yes,
okay.
It's like a school bully.
Yeah, it's true.
They're basically like
it's
school bullies.
It's all just high school.
Doesn't it feel like that?
Kind of what it feels like. Yeah, absolutely. When you go to an award show now, a music award show, it's like no different than recess. And you're just like, and everybody kind of plays their role, and it's
recess, the people who act the worst are not rewarded for being dickheads.
True.
Whereas in this business, they're like, that guy's a fucking lunatic. Let's give him some more money. Let's stoke that fire.
And the Grammy for best dickhead goes to.
There were a lot of entrants in this category.
Yeah. I'm gonna let you finish.
I want to play. There's something that I've been since I've been playing a lot of stuff on this podcast.
Yeah, this is. Do you do this a lot? Do you just put the speaker to the mic and just kind of turn your podcast into a DJ?
Not really, but this is something that I've been obsessed with the last couple days, which is the isolated vocal track from "Gimme Shelter."
Oh man,
it's a female voice, Mary Clayton.
Yeah,
where she's it's just a shot. Like they basically it's her isolated track.
No way.
And it's kind of nestled into the song, so you don't hear it as well. But just listening to what she does is so fucking incredible.
What's been going on with all the isolated tracks lately? I feel like
because either they're incredible or very funny.
Yeah, but I imagine they're also like in vaults, like deep down in these studios. Like
I don't know where they're going.
Yeah.
But her voice is so fucking unbelievable, and you'll hear that her voice cracks, but it cracks in a musical way to the point where you hear Mick Jagger, which you don't really hear in the song, go woo, like he fucking it blows him away. Just listen to this.
All right,
this is Mary Clayton.
That's amazing.
And then at the end, he just goes, "Woo!"
That's incredible.
That is the most beautiful I've ever heard anyone sing.
That is.
Yeah. That's what she's singing. She's singing "Rape Murder." It's just a shot away.
But that they found an empty indoor swimming pool to do it in.
Yeah. Well, that's incredible. In those days, they didn't have. They had to.
All right,
kids weren't skating.
Community swim is back on. Come on. Thank you for letting us.
We're gonna fill this back in.
Yeah.
But I mean, it just kind of.
That's amazing.
It almost and this is old person talk, but you just look at what a lot of people are doing today, and you're like, yeah, see those people that was an actual talent.
You had to do that.
You had to be that good.
Yes.
And there was no like, we'll fix it. It was like you have to internally fix it in your own mouth.
Absolutely right. I personally love working with the producers that make you bring it like that too. Guys like Rob Cavallo, Rick Rubin, they make you. Everybody's in the same room. And that's terrifying and awesome. But, you know, when you can record like that, your recording sessions are basically as if you've got 1,000 people in front of you. Like, it's a performance. And, you know, that, just from listening to that, that's probably what made it on the record. That sounds like that. Those sound like the licks that are actually on the track.
That's the actual track.
And that's just one run through.
That was one run through. And it really, I guess with that song, there originally was not a female voice, and the producer was like, you know, I feel like there should be a female voice in there, so they brought her in.
Mick, we can't have you singing Rape and Murder. Let's bring in a lady.
Make it PC.
And she's still alive, Mary Clayton. She's a gospel singer, but
yeah.
God damn it. I mean,
so beautiful.
To be able to take your voice to the edge and it cracks, but it's still like,
oh, yeah.
But it fucking cracks.
But even when it cracks, it goes into these like uber harmonics. It just kind of, it still stays within the realm of like singing.
How much do you like how far to the edge can you take your voice during
I take
show?
It to the edge.
Fucking take it to the edge.
Oh yeah.
Like in your song Take It to the Edge?
Yeah, like my song Take It to the Edge. You know, when I wrote Take It to the Edge, it was actually about that very thing, Chris.
Is that one?
Sounds just like Take It to the Limit.
Yeah.
Take it to the edge. You see they're different.
Yeah,
because they're talking about the limit and mine is the edge. A limit there's no more. An edge there's a dropping off point.
Yeah. Drop me in the water. All I can think about is that fish on the wall. Now,
like, yes, Billy Bass.
Yeah, Billy Bass. Yeah.
How funny did we all think that was?
Oh when it, man, not oh, very.
The writers of The Sopranos thought it was hilarious.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah,
you know, you could not walk into an Oz, store without.
It really took out the dancing flowers. Remember the dancing flowers?
Oh, they were just.
Yeah.
Or the dancing Coke can.
Oh,
the dancing Coke can. Yeah.
You guys are just going through all of Spencer's gift inventory.
Think Geek did one where it was Darth Vader in his garage and there was a Billy Bass with an Admiral Akbar face on it. And he was just listening to it and then the Akbar face would come out and sing.
Well, like, you know, Geffen will say that, like, you know, the Roxy killed the troubadour. I think that Billy Bass, like, killed Sharper Image.
I think it did.
Yeah,
it killed Sharper Image. Yeah. Because it's not they lost all
true
their
Hollywood stories.
They lost all their brick and mortar.
Is that really something he said?
Just privately at a dinner party.
I mean, he must have mused that to himself at some point.
Sure, at some point, yeah, sure.
Troubadour is a way better venue than the Roxy.
Well, I mean, you know, time heals all wounds.
Sure.
When you...
So, yes, I take my voice to the limit, Chris.
You take it all the way.
Having a great producer, though, and a great kind of voice coach, and having people outside of you to listen to you and say, no, I think you can take this further. Like, it's you know, it's one of those things where I'll be in the booth and I'll feel, I don't know if I can do it again. And it's always that time when somebody says, oh, I think you can, and I think I want you to take it here, that you wind up taking it past anything you thought you could do. Yeah, the voice is actually really strong if you let it be, you know.
Well, talking, you know, like I was losing my voice on the road for a while.
Talking's harder than singing.
It is. So when I'm doing, you know, if I'm doing like 6 hours of stand up over the course of a couple of days,
yeah,
you know, but I was blowing my voice out, and yeah, I had to change my stand up style, which I think was actually a good thing, to not yell so much, because I was trying so hard. You're projecting your voice in these shitty, crappy mics,
and your energy is trying to reach
PA
the back
systems
of the house, and yeah, you're, you know, yeah. So yeah, you just take it to a very dry, very droll comedy
Why
routine.
Am I yelling right now? And so, like, I had to pull that back.
Bring them to you.
You've worked with Rick Rubin?
I have. Yes, we made a record together.
That's great.
It was fun.
Like, what? Any cool stories about?
Did
Rick
he
Rubin?
Sing on it?
He didn't sing. No. I had just basically like had the number one record of the year in any category, making a Christmas album. So of course the natural next step is
Thanksgiving album.
Is Rick Rubin? Yes, Rick Rubin. Hanukkah record. No, I. So I basically was like, okay, I've basically closed a certain chapter. Like this was something I didn't expect to blow up. It totally blew up. If I just do more of the same the next time around, I'm going to be miserable. So I met with Rick in Malibu, and we just kind of talked about what it is we wanted to do and our philosophies, and we weren't going to work together, but we realized we had more in common than we thought. And he says, okay, well, when you finish writing some songs, you know, play them for me, and I don't know if I can produce your record, but I'll give you some advice. And so I started playing him songs that I was working on, and he started having so many notes and so many ideas, because he'd never really done an album that was orchestral based, and that was really exciting for him, because he grew up on a lot of old school orchestra based records, and I had just done a Christmas album, he had just done Death Magnetic for Metallica, so we were coming from totally different places, but we both were ready for kind of a change. So we got into the studio, and we got an orchestra at Capitol Records, and he kind of started really guiding me through a lot of wonderful places. I mean, he takes forever. We take forever to make an album. It took us 2.5-3 years.
Whoa.
But it's worth it. You learn a lot working with Rick, and we had a great, great time, and we may do it again in the future, but it was interesting.
That's awesome. Do you sort of look at that sort of between, oh, I should make the same kind of thing because that's what people liked, or, oh, I have to make a completely different kind of thing?
It's you know, it's very, very tough to find that balance, because you don't want to bite the hand that feeds you. You want to expand without alienating. And first and foremost, I'm always thinking about what it is the fans want to do, because it's not vocal masturbation. You're doing it for, you know, for the public. At the same time, you got to stay fresh, and you got to think to yourself, well, if I'm bored, maybe they're going to get bored too. So if I'm feeling like, if I'm getting that not so fresh feeling,
yes, then you need a music.
Then it's important. It's important. Yeah, you need a little bit of that, and you need somebody to kind of shake you a bit and make you scared again. I think that's the main thing. Is that after 6 or 7 albums, it can, once you start feeling like the studio is just another day at the office, you need to do something that scares you again. I think it's important to have those nerves again. And working with Rick was a very nerve wracking experience, and it was a good one. And you know, it was one of those records that was really, really well reviewed, and the fans were kind of hit and miss about it. But it was something I needed to do, and it was an exciting process. And you learn from that, and you kind of try and make a balance of both those worlds in the future. But you can get a little bit irresponsible with your experimenting.
Do you feel like you have a responsibility to, if let's say you make something and it's hit or miss, even let's say it's, you know, and but you're still proud of it, do you still feel responsibility to those people, like, hey, look, I tried something different, and
sure,
you know, like, do you?
I think ultimately, even if the core fan base has a discussion about it, maybe a passionate discussion, negative or positive, I think it's ultimately good for the long term of a career. I think I'd rather have something that sparks a debate among the fan base than have just another, oh, isn't that pleasant?
Yeah. You know,
I think that ultimately, even if it doesn't sell as well, or even if it sparks an argument, it's good for the long term path, you know. And you know, I can't believe that I have been doing this for 12, 13 years, and I can still make records and still put them out. I mean, nowadays, if you don't have a hit single within your first 15 minutes, you may not even be able to record a second song, you know,
right,
let alone a second album. So So no, I feel very fortunate in that regard.
You know, it's funny because I've sort of occasionally watched Ally McBeal, but your episode,
yeah,
I did happen to see your episode, which almost felt like it was, were you cast in that, or did they build that episode?
That was
it almost felt like it was built around you.
Fluke. That was like the Grammy thing. I couldn't believe it was like a Star Is Born kind of situation. The stars have been aligned for me. I mean, luck is preparation meets opportunity, but I had the opportunities for sure that I had to walk through those doors. I was going to be the 32nd wedding singer at the end of the finale, where Robert Downey Jr. and Calista Flockhart were finally going to get married at the end of the show.
Iron Man
and Ally McBeal were going to have a wonderful TV-only wedding.
But Sherlock Holmes?
But she's married to Indiana Jones.
He's busy flying my helicopter to
this audition.
Yeah, to audition.
You mean Derek Lutz from...
no one means that.
Oh, okay. All right. That was Back to School. All right. Sorry.
It's
Dangerfield.
Yes. Thank you. Yeah. So Robert Downey Jr., 3 days before we were supposed to show up on set, got arrested. So he was arrested at this, I forgot what it was, but it was this period of time when...
He would just turn up in people's houses.
Something
basically.
Like that. Yeah. And he's just one of the greatest of our generation, but he had a little bit of a problem back then. And so he couldn't show up to set because he was in jail. And so David E. Kelly, the creator of the show, basically was like, all right, well, I've got this crazy idea. I need to write it in 3 days. Can you act? I said, well, I did ace my... my math class dramatic essay. Triple spaced.
but every
word was golden. And so they basically threw me in from an uncredited... random singing Ave Maria or whatever it was going to be to, hey, why don't you send me some songs you're working on for your new record that hasn't come out yet? And he created this character for me, and he kind of made me this agoraphobic, teenager who's basically weighs 120 and, falls over every time he walks me. It was not, it was method acting. It was very much my real life. But it was an amazing opportunity. I love doing it. So yeah, my first thing was kind of doing comedy acting.
Because it actually felt like, I remember watching that episode and it almost felt like, oh, there's an artist and they're trying to break this artist. And this was the episode where it felt like the show was just to show the world, like, here's this kind of nerdy kid with an insane voice.
Well, people were coming up to me afterwards going, who was the singer that did your voice for that episode? So I took that as a compliment, but nobody had any clue. I had not released any kind of debut album. So as far as they knew, I was hired as an actor, and they had some crazy opera singer go and do it just for the sake of the story. But TV is fickle. Like, I was on all the morning shows, that week, and then people forget, and my album didn't come out till 5-6 months later, and it was selling, a whopping 150 copies a week.
Did you ever get to thank Robert Downey Jr. for being in jail?
I didn't thank him. I did see him at a kind of an award show party and talk to him, and just one of the nicest guys in the world. I mean, he's just been through a lot of personal things, and he remains just one of the most humble, talented guys. And I was too starstruck. I was kind of starstruck that I was talking to him that I actually didn't say I was that guy that replaced. Like, I don't think he would have remembered, to be honest. Mm.
You're very nice to people at parties, actually, because we were at a party last year or earlier this year. And this guy came up to you and basically, I understand what he was trying to say, but what he said,
I think I know exactly what you're talking.
You know exactly
about.
What I'm talking about. What he was trying,
him and his wife.
Yes, but what he was trying to say was, hey, we listen to your album when we share our love.
That's right.
In our marriage bed.
Yes.
But what actually came out of his mouth was, your voice is the voice of my wife's vagina.
Vagina is what he said. Yes,
which is a roundabout way.
Which is a terrifying thought.
But then, rather than saying like no, what I mean is, he kind of went
YouTube
deeper into
video.
That. Into that
and he's like, no, I'm sorry, that came out wrong. What I'm trying to say is, my wife is totally allowed to sleep with you. Wait a minute, no. Wait, what I'm trying to say is, no.
What I'm saying is, I'm staring at your mouth and I want to fuck it. All right, I feel like I'm not expressing exactly what it is that I'm trying.
And I did. I waited for the explanation that never came. as long as I possibly could, and then I got some nachos, which they were delicious.
That fixed everything. Could I please put you on the spot a little bit now?
Oh, sure.
My mom, which, by the way, you could totally have sex with her if you want.
You're right, by the way.
Oh, Please do it.
Do you know how many moms this guy can sleep with?
Yeah, dude, come on. Have you heard that song? Nobody loves you like your mama loves you, but who's loving your mama? I am.
Please record that.
I just did.
I think my mom's Ring Back is actually one of your might be one of your songs, but she doesn't know I'm going to do this.
Ring Back.
I just want to call her on speakerphone.
Oh, are we going
to
do this?
And see if she'll, so you can say hi to her.
Verizon Ring Back tone while your party is reached.
Oh,
nope.
I've been replaced.
Yeah.
It's okay to get replaced by Carly Simon.
I think that's Night Rainbow, if I'm not mistaken.
Hey, Mom, you're on speakerphone on the podcast right now.
Well, hello, everyone.
Well, hello.
Professional.
Hey, Mom, you're not driving the car, are you?
No, I'm not.
Are you in a place where you could you be okay? Like, let's just say if you passed out, you're not going to hit your head on the sink?
I'm steering a tandem bicycle.
Yes, go ahead. Is this better than the last surprise last year when you were throwing out the first pitch at the Dodger game?
Oh, God, pressure's on now.
Oh, the pressure's on now.
We're not going to beat that.
I think we are going to beat
that. Hang on, I want to manage her expectations. He is not having a grandchild for you.
No, I'm sorry. You're not getting a grandchild.
That wasn't even in my realm of thought.
A wise woman.
But you are sort of maybe getting a grandchild in the form of, say hello to Josh Groban.
Hello?
My God.
OMFG.
Oh my God. And I thought you couldn't talk to Dodgers.
She said she thought you didn't talk to Dodgers.
Very nice to meet you.
Hello.
Hi. Very nice to meet you.
That was a little moaning there. Could you not do that on the podcast?
No.
Oh, I just adore you, Josh.
Thank you.
Oh my goodness!
Well, you have a very talented son,
Mom. I don't want to make this awkward. I told Josh that you would sleep with him.
Jesus!
Stop that.
Yeah, you stop that this instant, Chris.
You're terrible.
All right, Mom.
Don't ruin this
glorious
moment,
Chris.
Oh my gosh, Josh, I love you so much.
I love you more. Thank you.
I admire you so much. You're just a wonderful talent, and I love you when you host. And
thank you.
Thanks for coming on the podcast.
Oh, I'm honored to be part of it. Thanks for the speaker chat.
All right, Mom.
Thanks for making my day. I love you.
I love you. I'm going to release you back into the wild. Bye.
Thank you. Okay.
Bye.
Bye.
Oh,
your mom is so cool.
She's very sweet.
That's awesome.
I wanted you to like hang up and go, oh, I'm so sorry about that, guys. My mom's such an idiot.
Oh, man. Jeez. Oh, she fucking ruins everything.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah, but
so
you
sorry.
Called her. Yeah. I know. No, drop me off a block from the mall, Mom.
Your hair is combed beautifully today, by the way. She did an excellent job.
See? Yeah. And I'm wearing clean underwear.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry to put you on the spot like that, but
you literally just
made her year.
That is so awesome. I love that.
I mean, like,
she
honestly.
She seems so cool.
And she's a fucking amazing voice, too.
Really?
My mother was the cantor when I was an altar boy.
Really?
Like, she rocked Ave Maria.
Oh, my.
In the craziest
Sing
way.
Off!
Well.
Well, maybe.
York and your mom are now my two bucket list duet partners.
Oh, my God. The three of you
The three of us. Yeah. What a glorious trio.
Would be amazing. Do you think Bjork's weird, or do you think she's like, or do you think she's like, why can't we just have a normal conversation?
Why can't the trees just grow hands?
So that they can hug you back.
Yes, yes. Like a killer whale.
Going back to Yoko Ono, who sounded like a killer whale on a lot of Double Fantasy.
So anyway, Bjork. Yes.
Do you ever think about trying to put together like a musical theater comedy kind of thing?
That'd be fun.
Yeah.
Like on Broadway
like stuff you're into. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think I've actually kind of secretly said to myself, 2014, I want to do some theater. I want to do some finally get on Broadway. I've had an amazing time. I did this kind of there's this musical called Chess. That's this kind of underground. Like it's got this really cult fan base.
Are you talking about fucking Murray Head's One Night in Bangkok?
Yes, I am. Yes.
God, I just was fucking singing that in my car the other day.
It's brilliant. The score is brilliant. It was Benny and Bjorn from ABBA and Tim Rice made this brilliant
musical. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I used to play that song on my cassette player Walkman on the way to chess matches when I played competitive chess grade school.
I get my thrills above the waistline, sister.
Do you know that that Murray Head is the brother of Anthony Head, who played Giles in Buffy the Vampire Slayer?
Really?
How many people have the last name Head? Just those two.
Just those two. They must.
Bangkok. Oriental City. But the city don't know.
Johnny, you want to grab coffee?
The grim of the chess world and show with everything. Hey, but
Yul Brynner. Oh boy.
Yeah. So you're going to do that or you going
So that's not the part I would play.
But sorry.
No, I actually did. I did it. I did it one night on Broadway for the Actors Fund, and then did it two nights at Royal Albert Hall with the London Symphony, and we taped it for PBS. And it was me, Adam Pascal from Rent, among other things, played that part, played the American. I was the Russian, got to sing Anthem and those songs. But I've been talking to Tim Rice, and we would love to try and bring chess to, you know, the music is brilliant. The story, it's a little hard to bring a chess game to a Broadway stage, you know, and make it exciting.
If they made Spider-Man turn off the dark, I think they could make a thing about chess.
Yeah, just, you know, bishops flying in from the ceiling.
Exactly.
The front row is always going to be pawns, no matter what. The front row is like everyone has to put on little pawn hats,
and then every front row shape there's a knight.
Exactly.
Can't explain it. The front row is going to get splashed. Just so you know.
Just so you know.
Put on your plastic ponchos.
Yeah, it's a water show.
Pretty much. Yes.
We can't just do chess, but we could do an aquatic chess.
Yes.
If you
chess. I don't know.
Oh, do it topless.
Yes. There you go. Yeah.
I would think you would be able to do that. I would think with you and Tim Rice that someone would just be like, here is a truck full of money. Please do this.
That's how I get paid. Yeah, if it's not in the truck.
Trucks.
Yeah.
You get your kicks above the waist.
Sunshine. What a thing to say.
It is a weird thing.
I'm gonna ask Tim about that line.
I fall asleep at night just singing that song.
Yeah.
To myself.
I mean, who writes Golden Cloister? Who rhymes oyster with cloister? I mean, really. Who throws a shoe, honestly?
Moister. Yeah. That's another word you can do.
Yeah. This grips me more than Muddo Muddy Old River or a reclining Buddha. He says Buddha. It's weird.
Buddha.
I feel like maybe we'll end the podcast with a couple of... you guys know the song, right?
No.
You don't know One Night in Bangkok?
Yeah, I don't.
Are you goddamn fucking kidding me?
I like that passion. Yeah. That's the last time, actually, that song is the last time that a musical theater song has been number one on the top 40 chart.
And that was like 84 or 85,
something like that, yes.
Yeah. I don't know how this has flown under my radar.
Because you know, you still know so much
I
about
get my
music.
Kicks above the radar.
Oh, hey. Sunshine.
Yeah.
One night in Bangkok, there's a hard man humble.
A hard man humble.
Nothing. Not much between despair and ecstasy.
Play it, Katie.
Play it.
I could just play it from my phone because I fucking have it.
Let's keep that trend going.
I'd like to hear it.
I might have it. Wait, is this it? No, that's not it.
No, that's actually just music from Bangkok.
An exclusive new Josh Groban track.
Gonna drop that beat.
One night in Bangkok.
Yes. Bangkok, Oriental City. In the city, don't know what the city is kept. Yeah. The creme de la creme.
What? The chess world in a what? Show with what? Everything. Yul Brynner.
Yeah. Listen to the synth horns.
Sammy Davis Jr. Time flies. Doesn't
seem a minute since the Tyrolean spa had the chess boys in it. Chess boys, the chess boys, in it.
There's no ordinary man, yo. It's Iceland. Look where Bjork's from.
That's right. Oh my god, it's all coming full circle. Full circle.
This place.
The sound engineering is actually pretty amazing on this. Right here. That's like some Quincy Jones shit right there.
Well, this part of those ways.
It's a drag.
It's a bug.
It's really such a pity to be looking at my little titties.
What do you mean? You've seen
one crowded, polluted, never heard of it.
That's so weird. And you're only like a couple years older than me. You say you're 32?
Yeah.
Get tied. You took it to a tourist whose every move's among the purest.
Here's the line. I get my kids above the waistline, sunshine. He's just fucking telling it like it is.
One night in Bangkok makes a hard man humble. I bet Deanna knows this one. And I probably know
I think there's a pan flute solo.
Oh, there is. There absolutely is.
You ready?
Why wouldn't there be?
You ready for a pan flute solo that was at the top of the music charts?
I'm always ready for a pan flute solo.
Come on, Zamfir. Come on, Zamfir. Bring it.
Four, three, two.
It's like a Chewbacca pan solo.
It's Julie Andrews as Chewbacca.
It is.
Just as a callback.
You should see the choreography for this part.
I love that 80s. Like,
and it's about playing chess.
That's the thing. Or reclining
Buddha. Buddha. Thank God I'm only watching the game. Controlling it.
I don't see you guys raging the kind of mate I'm contemplating. I'd let you watch. I would invite you, but the queens we use would not excite you.
It's almost Fred Schneiderish.
Yeah.
Not excite you.
He is so snotty in this rap.
He's kind of a dick.
This is the snarkiest rap ever.
It really is.
Yeah. This is before Humpty Dance. This is like... this is before it got to new levels of snarky.
I do the Humpty. Do the rounds with the Humpty. Yo, ladies, oh, how I like to funk thee.
Yeah.
And all the rappers in the top 10, please allow me to bump thee.
Yes.
What is your chance?
I'm seeing a mashup. Not much between
despair and ecstasy. I once got busy in a Burger King bathroom.
Oh, God.
How much do you think we have to pay to play this whole song?
This is the chance. We're doing commentary over it, so it's okay.
Yeah, it's all right.
And that's the whole song.
Scene.
And scene.
Wow, Josh, thank you for our newest segment, which is song commentaries.
That was thrilling.
Songitaries, I love it.
Songitaries.
We don't have to push together all words.
I want to.
Right.
I
do.
Oh, God.
Well, thank you, Josh Groban.
Man, this has been a blast.
You're
thank
delightful.
You. Thanks for having me.
I hope we get to hang out more.
Yes.
And,
are you around for a while? The next time you come back, we'll talk about you.
Okay.
You know,
we got plenty of that in, trust me. You know those moments where we weren't laughing? Yeah. That's,
buddy. Yeah. Also, you're wearing the best shirt ever.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Josh Groban, thank you for being here.
You guys are the best. Thanks for
thank
having me.
Thank you for making my mom happy.
Oh, you're so welcome.
Enjoy your burrito.
I will.
Enjoy your burrito. There's no ordinary menu.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
This episode of the Nerdist Podcast is brought to you by Hulu Plus. Don't forget to sign up for your free trial of Hulu Plus and start watching your favorite hit shows right now. Go to HuluPlus.com/Nerdist, all lowercase, for your extended free trial. Again, HuluPlus.com/Nerdist.
I feel like I was blindsided.
Because it's a competition show.
From the producers of Jury Duty and The Bachelor.
We have scoured the earth for the 14 greatest reality contestants that were available during our production window.
Comes a reality competition show about reality competition shows.
Nobody has dared to find out who is the actual best at just being on a reality show. I'm your host, comedian Daniel Tosh.
Is win or go home.
Each episode, our contestants will face new challenges that will test their strength and lack of life skills for a chance to win $200
million.
$200,000.
Prepare, because it's about to be ugly, crying, lots of fighting.
Tayshia, I have to defend myself.
Celebrating 25 years of reality TV with your favorites.
I have diarrhea. You cannot do this to me.
What in gay hell have I got myself into?
The GOAT. Stream free on Amazon Freevee or Prime Video.